This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show or podcast, number 148 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording is the first of three segments from the election information event hosted by the group Franklin in Focus, held at the Franklin Public Library on Saturday, October 13, here in 2018. The first segment covers the information session with the two candidates for the 10th Norfolk Representative District, our incumbent, Representative Jeff Roy, and the challenger, current town councilor, Patrick Casey. The intro to the discussion is provided by Monique Doyle and Alan Earls, founders of Franklin in Focus. The information session allowed each candidate to make an opening statement, answer three questions that were asked of each candidate jointly, and then three questions specific to each candidate before providing a closing comment. The session recording runs just about an hour, so without further ado, here is the audio recording.
We have permission to go, right? Okay, great. I'm going to sit so I can be fully recorded for posterity here. Do you want to say something, buddy?
Sure.
Okay. Introduce the events.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Back off the mic a little bit.
Is that better?
That's fine.
Okay. My name is Monique Doyle, and Alan Earl and I are part of Franklin in Focus. It's a group that we founded to bring information to the town, non-political. We're non-political in terms of what we're presenting. It's up to you to decide how things are going and what you choose. And we've invited Representative Patrick from the town council, Representative Casey, and Representative
Councilor Casey.
You know something? You didn't have enough coffee.
This woman
needs another cup of coffee. Yeah.
And Representative Roy, who are coming to speak about issues. And we also have Teresa Burr from, she's the town clerk in Franklin, she's going to talk about voter registration. I believe we have two representatives to speak about ballot question number one. And I have not met the representative, so if you...
I'm Robin Lucia, I'm representing the vote yes
vote. All right, this is the yes vote and the no? Is the no vote
Andrew.
Here?
Andrew.
Okay, all right. I'm sure he'll
I was told like 10:30, but I just wanted to hear what was going on in the
town. Oh, thank
you.
We also have a sign-in sheet if anybody would like to sign in with your name and email, and if you have any other areas of interest that you'd like us to focus on in the future, the sign-in sheet is right here. We can pass it around again. So thank you all for coming. Appreciate it. I'm sorry that I mixed up your names. I need more coffee.
No problem at all.
Are there any questions or comments before we begin? Thank you.
Are you going to announce that they can ask questions?
Yeah, I'm going to do that. Double teaming here. Yes, as Monique mentioned, I'm Alan Earls. We're the co-troublemakers on this event. And lest I forget, if the pad we have passed around with our invitations for questions for the candidates for later could be passed up to us at some point reasonably soon. We can sort through that and be prepared to do that. We've put together a format where the candidates will ask each other questions and also make a brief statement about their own positions, and then toward the end we'll utilize the questions that have been submitted and propose them to each of the candidates or both of the candidates depending on what the author of the question suggested. So with that, I think we're almost ready to get started. I've been reading John Adams' biography over the last few weeks, and he worried so much about how to keep a democratic republic healthy, and this is the kind of thing that keeps a democratic republic healthy, so thank you all for coming. Thank you so much to the candidates.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay, we're going to first ask the candidates to introduce themselves. I don't know if you want to flip a coin to see who goes first, or if you just want to decide.
I have any coin on me?
You know, I don't carry cash. Can we flip a debit card?
I'll flip a coin. Jeff, you're it.
All right.
So we have these colorful little timers to keep these folks honest. You can flip, when you're ready to start, Jeff, you can flip the yellow timer for 3 minutes and briefly introduce yourself and discuss, actually, pardon me, we're going to ask you to make that 5 minutes, which is the green one. Discuss the top three things you hope to accomplish in the legislature over the next 2 years for the state or the district.
Great. All right, so flip the green timer. Great. Good morning, and thank you, everyone, for coming here this morning. My name is Jeffrey Roy, and I have had the honor and privilege of serving as the state representative for Franklin and Medway for the past 6 years. Being your representative has been one of the greatest honors of my life, and I'm asking for your vote so that we can continue this work together. The job of a state representative is diverse, but most importantly, it's to be your voice on Beacon Hill. With 6 years of experience in the State House, 14 years of local government experience, and 32 years as an attorney, I know firsthand how state government can help and hurt our communities. As a husband, a father of three, attorney, taxpayer, homeowner, small business owner, and public servant, I bring experience, creativity, and a bipartisan approach to the job. And I will continue to make progress on the quality of life issues that impact all of you. As your representative, I will continue to be accessible and get results for you. Your priorities, local aid, economic development, education, and solving the opioid epidemic will continue to be my focus. I've always understood that the role of government is to serve citizens and bring people together to make Massachusetts a great place to live, work, and raise a family. The top three things I hope to achieve in the legislature over the next 2 years for the state and this district include education, economic development, health care, and substance use disorder. On the education front, Massachusetts is not only number one in the nation, it's number one in the world. But we don't rest on our laurels. We constantly seek to do better. I was honored to be appointed by the Speaker in 2017 to serve on the National Conference of State Legislators Student-Centered Learning Commission. And that's a bipartisan group of state legislators studying policy objectives, obstacles, and recommendations to help states move forward with systems that support student-centered learning opportunities. And we're going to issue that report in 2019 and look forward to sharing those results with you. I'm thrilled that we took up legislation in this particular session to involve youth in civic engagement and bring civics education back to our public schools. And I will continue to press for legislation on student data privacy, computational thinking and computer coding in schools, and other measures to improve opportunities for our kids. It's important to let our children explore and live their passions. We need to cultivate the creativity that is going to drive our economy in the future. And we must give every child the hope and means to achieve the American dream. Promoting job creation, workforce development, and infrastructure improvements are constant goals in the economic development realm. And the over $1 billion in capital spending that we approved last year in the legislature is just one measure of proof. As House Chair of the Manufacturing Caucus, we have been working to make Massachusetts the number one state in the nation for manufacturing and to foster the renaissance of that industry in the state. And I will continue to do that work in the next session to bring more good jobs to our area. In the healthcare arena, I was appointed as the acting chair of the Healthcare Finance Committee in February 2018. And in that role, I reviewed over 350 pieces of legislation involving reforms to our healthcare system and released a 180-page omnibus healthcare reform bill to increase access to care and lower costs. I plan on finishing this work that we started in this session to do both, increase access to care and reduce those costs. Combating the opioid epidemic is critical to our healthcare system. In the past 6 years, the legislature has increased funding for substance addiction services by more than 65% and passed two landmark bills. I'm happy to say that I serve as a member of the Mental Health Substance Abuse and Recovery Committee, and I was a co-founder, along with, I see many of the folks in this room of the Safe Coalition, which is a group that was brought together in this community to support those coping with substance abuse disorder. We founded the coalition to provide a pathway for support, education, treatment options, and coping mechanisms for those affected by the disease. And this organization has provided resources to our community that were non-existent before 2015, and in the process has saved lives. I was pleased to advocate for and receive $100,000 in state funding to support these efforts. I will continue that work in the next session. And it is for those reasons that I'm here today. I'm looking forward to engaging with Patrick on many of the issues that are important to you, and I'm asking for your vote in November 6th of 2018. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. I would just interject one note. My phone just beeped at me and reminded me I should have asked everyone to silence your ringers if you can. And now, same thing for Patrick. Could you, Patrick Casey, list the top three things you hope to achieve if you're in the legislature over the next 2 years for the state?
Can you speak up?
Yes. Patrick Casey, could you please list the three things you hope to accomplish in the legislature over the next 2 years for the state or the district?
Awesome. All right.
There you go.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming out on this rainy Saturday morning. My name is Patrick Casey, and I'm running to be your next state representative for the 10th District of Norfolk County. I'm a lifelong resident of Franklin and have gone through the public school system. For the last 5.5 years, I have been working at a global media technology and marketing services company called International Data Group. This past fall, I decided to run for the Franklin Town Council and received the most votes out of 13 candidates. Now I'm seeking to serve as your state representative. My campaign revolves around a 7-point plan to restore common sense to Beacon Hill. The first point is to restore common sense through the legislative process. 2, improve the modern healthcare system. 3, reverse the 40% pay raise the current state legislators gave themselves. 4, to combat the drug epidemic. 5, respect the duly passed laws of the state and federal government. 6, update our transportation infrastructure. And 7, eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. Of those three, I would, since we're asked the three top points we want to run on, I think the first three I would really want to stress is the legislative process, education, and the opioid epidemic. Since 1955, the State House has been controlled by the Democratic Party, and we've seen a pretty stronghold of power on the State House level where there hasn't been a balanced conversation enough where everyone in our district is feeling represented. Because of this, there's been a loss of transparency and accountability for people who are making decisions on Beacon Hill. So I think bringing a more balanced conversation to Beacon Hill is essential, and having someone that's going to represent both sides of our district and really put in a voice to represent these people is essential, and not just have someone that's going to always vote in line with the Speaker of the House. As for education, I think it's crucial that we revisit the formula that we've been talking about for Chapter 70 funding. Since 1993, when it was put into effect, a lot of towns and districts have changed in demographics and income levels. So I think it's really important that we address the education formula. I mean, we've been talking about it for the last 10 years. The Senate put in their 2 cents on how we should change it, but the House of Representatives shot it down this past session. I think if we bring more people who represent the other side of the aisle, we can try and hold each other accountable for making these decisions and making strides into actually having a change instead of just pushing it off to the next 2 years. And then finally, the opioid epidemic. I've done some community involvement with the Safe Coalition, volunteering when I can. And it's definitely opened up my eyes to really see the effect that people who are being hurt by this epidemic, it really is a ripple effect to the families and the rest of the community that's involved, even though you don't see it directly, if it's not in your family or friend circle. So I think it's essential that we really take a four-pronged approach into prevention, intervention, treatment, and recovery. This is a topic that should be in the headlines every single day until we can actually start to put somewhat of a dent into this epidemic and really address what's going on. So that's just a broad approach of what I want to address if I am elected this November. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. Our next section, we are going to invite the candidates to ask each other questions. And Jeff, we flipped the coin, so you're candidate one.
Okay.
This is your opportunity to ask Patrick a question. You can take up to 3 minutes to do that asking, and then Patrick will have an opportunity to respond.
3 minutes to ask a question? You've got a lot of questions
in there. In other words, you're free to make an indictment. You can just ask a question.
Yeah, I'm just going to ask a question. And Pat, thank you for your broad outline of the items that are priorities in your campaign: local aid, opiate epidemic, health care, and education. I'm really happy that you want to engage in these areas, as they have been signature issues for me in my 20 years of public service. As an education committee and school committee member, one of the co-founders of the SAFE Coalition, acting chair of the Healthcare Finance Committee, and a strong proponent of and one who has delivered local aid, I was wondering if you could tell us what you have done in any of these areas, and please contrast that with the work that I have done.
Thank you for your question, Jeff. Well, I think since you've been inside the legislature since 2012, you didn't have all of that under your belt going into the legislature. So I think
actually the question is talking about 20 years of public service.
Well, I'm not at the age that you are, so I don't have that ability to get into that, but and no fault at your age, but since I've been in public service for since my high school years, I've always gone out of my way to volunteer on trips throughout the country. And ever since I left my college years, I've focused on where I live so I can help the people around my community. I've volunteered at the Franklin Food Pantry through the SAFE Coalition, and then this past fall I ran for the town council. I think it's pretty apparent that I take initiative on what's happening in my community, trying to address what's going on in my community. And I think to say that there's a lack of experience is not that, it's not the right question to ask, because before my opponent here ran for the state legislator, he was only inside on the town council for 2 years as well. So I think it's a go-to question for someone that's my age, trying to go for this state representative position. But you can't really have these different accomplishments under your belt if you don't have the opportunity to go for the opportunity to be as a state representative. So I think people would be pleasantly surprised what we'd be able to accomplish if I were to be your state representative for this district. And my apologies, I did not flip over my
I think you're good.
That was 2 minutes.
Okay.
Like a hawk. Okay, Patrick, it's your turn to ask your opponent, Jeffrey.
Well, don't I get a response?
Oh, I'm sorry. We're going to just go one back and forth.
It says response to above. Oh, okay. All right.
It does.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right.
You're right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So thank you, Pat. And I think experience is very important. And I know that you mentioned my 2 years of experience on the town council, but you completely ignored my 10 years on the school committee, which was probably some of the most significant work that I have done in my career. You ignored my service as the chair of the master plan committee, which the town council that you're serving now on is referring to and enacting many of the provisions that were in there. I would suggest you were given an opportunity by the voters of this community in November of 2017 to perform a task and serve as a town councilor and develop some experience and do some work in this community. And I found it surprising that 3 months into that job, you told the community that that wasn't really the job that you wanted to do and that you wanted to be the state representative. I think it's important that you develop a resume, develop some experience, work on some projects in this town, and show the citizens what you can do in this community. I have been in the legislature for 6 years, and I know that you say you have been following the activities up on Beacon Hill for many years, but I have never heard from you once in my 6 years being on Beacon Hill. I checked with my predecessor, Jim Valley. He had never heard from you on these issues. And how do we work together? I'll tell you, Robert DeLorco, who's in this room, has reached out to me on the issue of substance use disorder, and you see the development of the SAFE Coalition. Glenn Jones reached out to me on legal notices that appear in the paper, and we passed a bill to get those legal notices online. Mel Hamlin, who serves on the council with you, reached out to me about establishing an agricultural commission. We passed legislation in 5 months to get that agricultural commission. Tom Mercer reaches out to me frequently on education and the arts. Deb Pellegri has reached out to me on election law issues. Glenn Trindade from the Medway Selectmen reaches out to me on recreational facilities. These are people who do get in touch with their legislature, work with them, and together we're able to accomplish things. I think you need to take a deep breath and do some work in the community and show the citizens what you can do, and then we can have a conversation about contrasting and comparing our records.
Well, okay. It is now Patrick's opportunity to ask Jeff a question.
Mr. Roy, can you name a time when you voted against the Speaker of the House on a roll call vote and explain how the district benefited from it?
I can name occasions when I have disagreed with the Speaker. I don't wait until there's a roll call vote to engage with the Speaker and tell him where I disagree. In fact, the process of legislating involves committee hearings. It involves a number of meetings. And let me give you the example of putting together the health care reform bill. The health care reform bill became my project in February of 2018. Beginning in February 2018, I probably had 107 meetings with stakeholders from all areas of the arena. We sat and we talked about issues that were important to them. In the course of that, I would have several meetings with the Speaker of the House and say, these are the issues that are important. And he would express to me issues that were priorities for him. We would take care of our differences in those meetings, and we brought to the House floor through the leadership of the Speaker, through the leadership of my committee chairmanship, and we brought together a bill that was not complete consensus of the 160 member body, but it was a good mix of things that people wanted in that bill that was a result of discussions and compromise. And when that vote came to the floor, we still had some people who were not comfortable with components that were in the bill. So we had, the session starts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That particular session did not get over until 11 p.m. That was a lot of negotiating, in talking to members, both Democrats and Republicans. It was my job, my charge, to go and meet with members to try to talk to them about what particular provisions of the bill we need to change to accommodate their needs so that we could get a yes vote on that bill. And it wasn't until 10:30 that we had achieved the consensus that was necessary to put that bill to a vote. And when we put that bill to a vote, that's when you got yes votes. And that's typically how legislation is accomplished. And so I have a strong voting record with the Speaker of the House, and I would suggest that how do you know that he's not following how I vote on the particular issues? I mean, we have these discussions so that we can work as a leadership team and vote together to do things that are in the best interest of this Commonwealth and our district.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Yes. Now we move on to audience questions. For both of you, both the candidates, we, I think, jotted down like probably 5 questions, but since we've moved through the first parts relatively quickly, we're going to try to do about 9 audience questions that we have here. 3 of them will be for both of you, so you'll both get a chance to respond, and then we'll each get 3 individual questions that we're aimed at you. We'd like to start with a question for both of you, and again, keeping the same format. Jeff, if you'd like to respond first, that'd be great, followed by Patrick.
Sure.
I have a question for both candidates. The Trump.
How many minutes do they get for each?
3.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
3 for each response?
Yes. Right, for each person, each response.
Hello.
The Trump administration has been very hostile towards LGBT rights, and there has also been concern about an erosion of those rights on the Supreme Court. I want to know whether you personally support the right of same-sex couples to marry and whether you will work to uphold that right. Jeff?
The answer is unequivocally yes. I believe I have worked to support that right. I've never been a believer in having the government tell anyone who they can love. And I was so proud to be from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, which was the first state to recognize same-sex marriage. And I have talked to colleagues who served in the legislature during that contentious time period when the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court issued its opinion, and then the fallout from that opinion, and then the vote on the House and Senate floor to overturn that decision. And people talked to me about how emotional that particular period in Massachusetts history was. But I'm so proud to say that our legislature upheld the values of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, the values of freedom to love whoever you choose, and I wholly support that. And the transgender vote came up for a vote in June of 2016, where we extended the rights of transgender individuals to freedom and liberty in places of public accommodation, to recognize that they are human beings and should be treated accordingly wherever they go, whether it be a restaurant, whether it be any other place of public accommodation. And I'm so proud that Massachusetts stood strong in protecting the freedom of individuals, and I'll continue to work to protect those rights and freedoms.
Patrick?
Yes, so my stance has always been consistent with loving and caring anyone, no matter who they love or how they identify themselves for their own gender identity. I think it's really important to keep in mind that these groups of people contribute so much to our society that they should never feel harmed or not loved or unsafe from anyone at any point in their life just because of how they feel towards other individuals or towards themselves. My personal stance towards gay marriage is to have it kept between a man and a woman, and that is in terms of just keeping a stronger society as a whole. I think families are very They benefit greatly from keeping a stronger, tight-knit family with just between a mother and a father. And I think children should have the they should have the almost right to receive love from both a mother and a father, and have them really care for them. But I'm not saying a same-sex couple would not love their children, but I think it's appropriate to have a child receive that love and care from a mother and a father who are completely different from each other. If I'm elected this November, I will make sure that anyone from these groups are fully represented to keep their own safety and to not feel harmed in any way. I think in terms of the transgender bathroom bill, it's a little confusing with how it's written, but I think to make sure that we have people who support transgender individuals and make them feel public safe in public accommodations is vital. But I think the way that the law is written, it specifically keeps or it specifically allows those who want to shield themselves with that law to go in and take advantage of people in certain restrooms. And we've seen this across the country at in different states. And I know people say it hasn't happened in Massachusetts yet, but you know, if the door is open for these people to take advantage of the law, they will. We've seen this at Target stores across the entire country, and now people are actually waking up to the fact that this is an unsafe situation. So I think just remembering that we need to have both sides always feeling safe no matter what. Sorry about that, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we have another question for both candidates. It's not completely articulated here, but I think the notion is explain how you would help with these issues, namely funding for education such as special education, transportation, health insurance, unfunded mandates. Again, that's special ed, transportation, health insurance, and unfunded mandates. Jeff?
Well, I have been a long time proponent of increased education funding, and you'll see from the FY19 budget that we passed earlier this year that we have increased education funding to over $4 billion, which is the highest in the history of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Massachusetts is one of very few states that includes a right to education in the very Constitution that was written by John Adams. I don't know if you got to that part in the biography, but he instilled in the Constitution of Massachusetts the right to a free and public education. And I think education is the most important thing that we do in government work. So anything that we can do to support increased funding. Franklin happens to benefit greatly from the current Chapter 70 formula, and according to the latest budget, $28,191,931 comes to the community of Franklin in the form of Chapter 70 aid, and we increase that each and every year. We increased the funding for special education because we recognize that everyone is entitled to a free and appropriate education, and we take that responsibility seriously. On unfunded mandates, this is something that I railed against as a school committee member. Every day of my 10 years of service on that committee, you'll notice that when you see legislation coming out of the legislature these days, it's often tied with the phrase subject to appropriation, which means we're not going to enforce any community to do any particular mandate without funding following that. And you know, that's an important piece that is included in every bit of legislation, because we do not want to put the burden on the communities to do some of these mandates. And some of the mandates, civics education,
is one of the mandates that we passed in 2018. That's accompanied by funding. And if it's not, and the community chooses not to do it, they are free not to do it without the appropriation. So I think that, in a nutshell, gives you an idea of where I stand on public education.
Thank you, Jeff. Patrick?
I agree. I mean, public education is vital to a society. You can see why so many people want to move to our district just because of the new schools we were able to build here and really invest into our faculty to economic development follows from strong communities that have strong education. I appreciate you pointing out the aid that Franklin has received, but you're always forgetting Medway. Medway needs to be represented as much as Franklin. There are many people that I've met along the way where in Medway who are extremely frustrated with not having the right representation for their educational system. Their town has completely changed over the last 6 years, and there's a lot that's falling with economic development, but they need to have their educational needs met as well. So I think not just having a strong voice on Beacon Hill for Franklin, for more aid towards education in Chapter 70 funding, but also really representing Medway too as well, because they have felt very left in the dark with how they've been represented, not just educationally, but in all their aspects as well.
Great, thank you, Patrick. And that actually is a good segue, because our third and final question for both of you comes from someone who asks, what do you see as the biggest challenges to Franklin and Medway the next term, and how will you address these? So, Jeff, maybe you can talk about that.
One thing I can see that is cause for concern is growth. We see tremendous growth in apartment complexes around the town, which is bringing in more families. That's going to tax our roads and bridges and other infrastructure in the community. A great challenge that I have been working on in recent weeks is the commuter rail service. I'm a strong advocate of public transportation. I want as many people off of our roadways as possible, and I like to encourage people to use the train to get into the city of Boston. I was a 28-year commuter every single day taking that train from Franklin into Boston, but it suffered from deterioration of service. And the suffering of deterioration of service impacts this particular community, because a lot of people have moved here for many reasons, including our school system, but some have moved here because we have two commuter rail stations offering opportunities to commute into the city. That's a tremendous boost. But when that service is not reliable, and when you can't count on getting from your community into the city on time, that's a problem, and that's something that we actually had a meeting in this very room about a month ago where we had the general manager of Keolis in here, we had the general manager of the MBTA, we had the operations manager for the train to come and meet with community members so that they could be heard and express their desires, and it's resulted in improvement of service. One thing that I was not pleased with is 2 weeks after that meeting, they raised the price of parking in downtown Franklin to $6. But guess what? They're having a meeting with me and the Senate president in 2 weeks to talk about overturning that decision, because that discourages the use of public transportation. Getting roads and bridges is something that's very important. Chapter 98 from the state is something that I advocate for constantly, so that we can get our roads and bridges in tip-top shape, because moving goods and people along our roads in this community is critical. And finally, like every community across the United States of America, Franklin has been hit by the opioid epidemic. It is the biggest public health crisis in our generation. I am so proud and honored to have worked with so many people to bring that situation under control and to bring resources to this community that were non-existent in 2015. We have saved lives, but our overdose rates are still creeping up, and we need to continue the work on this effort, because when the fabric of your community is drained by people suffering from the disease of addiction, it tears the entire community apart. And we need to work together to offer these folks a pathway to recovery and make this community a compassionate, caring, and committed place.
Okay, Patrick, your turn. What the biggest challenges are for Franklin and Medway?
Yes. So I think the biggest challenges for Franklin and Medway are, just go back to the top three things that I want to address if I am to be elected this November. And that starts with the legislative process. Franklin and Medway needs a legislator that's going to represent their true needs and values, and not just continuously voting with the Speaker of the House. And that goes to show through different forms with, rolling back the sales tax rate instead of keeping the tax rate high and expecting to, claiming that when you're bringing back local aid that it's because of you, where it's really the people's tax dollars that should be going back to them, and not having one person that's going to decide where these funds are going to go. And then going back to the education topic is the formula in 1993 that needs to be revisited. Medway's felt left out in the dark with not being, not having enough representation on Beacon Hill with their educational needs. And again, opioids, there's been over 200 plus overdoses since 2014, and just in Franklin. I need to check Medway's stats, but those are the stats I could just find online for Franklin, where it's still a growing problem, and we need more access to Narcan, even though it's an expensive tool that we need to just save lives within our community. So I think continuously working with our local law enforcement agencies and different representatives in the medical industry is vital to really tackle this issue along at the State House. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Okay, now we're going to go to some individual questions for each of the candidates. The first one is for Jeff Roy. An individual asks, how are salary increases calculated for state reps? And we've heard references to that, sure. So that'd be great if you could explain that.
Absolutely. So salary increases for the annual rate of pay are set by the Constitution of Massachusetts. And the annual rate of pay is tied to the economic data for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So each January, the governor reviews the economic data and makes a determination of what the salary of a state representative is going to be. Interestingly enough, I was elected in November of 2012, and when I showed up in January, I was given a memo that the governor just slashed your salary by $1,100. And 2 years later, and this was a Democratic governor, I might add, 2 years later, the salary remained the same. And in 2017, Governor Baker looked at the economic data, thought things were going well in Massachusetts, and increased the salary by $1,000. So in that 6 year period, I'm back to where I would have been in 2012. In addition to the base pay that a legislator receives, there is an office expense that they're given. So you might not believe this, but Patrick, you'll find, if you are so fortunate to get to the State House, that you'll be paying for your own stamps, you'll be paying for your own citation covers, you'll be paying for your own paper, you'll be paying, if you open a district office, you'll be paying for that. So the About 35 years ago, the legislature introduced an office expense category, so every member of the House and Senate get expenses for maintaining an office. Currently, I get $15,000 for office expenses that cover me. When I started in 2012, it was $7,200, and it was increased to $15,000. And then beyond that, if you are selected to serve as a member of a leadership team, there are stipends that are available to legislators. This year, following the passing of the current chair, or the then chair of the Healthcare Finance, I became the acting chair of the Healthcare Finance, and that came with a $15,000 stipend. So that's generally how representatives are paid in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Great, thank you, Jeff. Pat, for you, individual rights. On your website, you express a desire to build a 15-person substance use risk task force. Your local community already has this. Is there anything you've learned from this coalition, and is there a reason why you aren't a member?
I am not aware of this commission, but I think there needs to be some top-down leadership from our governor that is providing guidance and taking initiative of putting people that are at local officials into this panel where they can oversee the entire district and roll it up to the state to bring their opinions and their expertise to these different facets within the problem for the opioid epidemic. There are people in the medical field that need to that we need to find there in the local law enforcement, people in psychiatric care, where it's not just I think it's not just a substance use disorder. I think it's also there's a mental health component that really plays a dual diagnosis that we need to address. And I think that appointing this panel would really trickle down to our district and bring, you know, the right resources and insight for tackling this issue.
I'd just like to suggest that the Special Commission on Behavioral Health Promotion and Upstream Prevention issued its report in April of 2018 on substance use, and the legislation that was passed in 2018 included a harm reduction commission. And if you had read the...
It was Patrick's question.
Well, I think it's important that folks know that the harm reduction commission was put in the legislation, and I was honored to be appointed as a member of that harm reduction commission. These are things you should know about at this point.
That commission was just appointed, so I think they might have taken a look at my website and used my advice.
Thank you both. Let's stick to the modest rules we have here. Jeff, another question for you. How much time is required at your position as a state rep, for example, in the state house and outside events? How many events do you attend in a week typically?
Well, I see my wife is here, so I'm gonna ask her to answer that question. I think it's a remarkable and daunting job. Truthfully, you can put into it and not do pretty much as much as you want, but that's never been my practice in government service. I can assure you that I'm out every single night of the week, and that includes Saturdays and Sundays. During the healthcare debate and preparing that piece of legislation, not only was I out every night, I was in the State House every Saturday, every Sunday, working with my staff, pulling together a 180-page omnibus bill. I have to leave here at 10:30 today because I'm going to an Eagle Scout Court of Honor to welcome in yet another leader. I've been to 107 Eagle Scout Court of Honors in 6 years being the state rep. I was up in, started my day yesterday at Micro Group in Medway, which is a manufacturer that was doing a manufacturing day to invite kids from Tri-County into the facility, to tour the facility and get an understanding of what manufacturing offers you. From there, I shot up to Devens, where I was at Magna Motion, which is another manufacturer, and we were making an announcement that PTC, through a public-private partnership, is offering ThingsWorx software that will help make aligns more efficient in factories, and that is they're going to offer it for free for small businesses that have under 250 employees or under $250 million in revenue. And that's going, we have a manufacturing renaissance that's going on in Massachusetts that's absolutely thriving. I find myself at manufacturers all over the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So every day, every night, every weekend. Is that true? And when I come home sometimes early, what's the question I get at the door? What are you doing here?
Thank you, Jeff.
You need to thank her.
Yeah, I do every day.
Patrick, another question from an audience member. What would you add to the current legislation, I think they mean legislature, both experientially and politically, to the opioid crisis, and have you been active in the state, in the SAFE Coalition?
So I'm relatively new to the SAFE Coalition. I started going to meetings and events this past year, and I wish I could get into it more, but along with my town council schedule, they tie into the same days of when they have their meetings and whatnot, but I'm always trying to, recirculate some news from the SAFE Coalition to make sure that people are aware of their different options for care in the district through the SAFE Coalition, and just being an advocate for the people who are leading the coalition. Jen Knight, who's here, is it now president, or congratulations. And Jim Derrick have done a phenomenal job running the SAFE Coalition and really taking the epidemic head on. And I think another thing to remember is with just my short time on the council so far, I've already led a charge to sue the drug manufacturers and distributors through an opioid tort litigation. The council decided to vote unanimously to have the town, without costing a penny, to join this litigation and to really address what the manufacturers and distributors that they need to take accountability for their the way they have gone with selling opioids into the districts, or into our local communities, where they were aware of how addictive these substances really are. So I think you can see that I have already taken the charge to, in this form, like go right to the source of where these opioids are coming from, and not just be a cheerleader on the sideline with the SAFE Coalition, but just really take initiative to bring that awareness while holding people accountable for these bad sales practices.
Great, thank you, Patrick. Okay, third and final audience question for Jeff. How much funding have you been able to secure for the towns of Franklin and Medway? I suppose that would be approximate numbers, since you may not have them all in your head, but.
Oh, no, oh, I have them.
Cheat sheet.
Good question, whoever asked that. I think one of the most important jobs of a state legislator is to promote your community, advocate for your community, and make sure that those tax dollars don't go to the other 351 communities. Bring them to your communities. And here's a summary, and this was actually a full-page ad that appeared in the local town pages, but I had it reproduced because I think this gives you a good sense of what we have been able to do through advocacy. $100,000 to the SAFE Coalition, $65,000 for hearing equipment for the Franklin Fire Department, $1 million to improve the SNET trail, $50,000 for the Horace Mann statue, $50,000 for the Veterans Memorial Parkway, which I drove by the town common. They're actively putting that under construction. It's going to open by November 11th, and they told me if they didn't get this $50,000, they would not have been able to get it done on time. Green Community, Franklin Housing, Charles River Meadowlands, this whole column on the side, and I'll leave this out and you can look at it, starts with the Chapter 78. Medway's not too shy at $10,412,000. They have a much smaller population of students than Franklin has. And the suggestion that I have not been taking care of Medway, there's a $350,000 grant to renovate the recreational space in Medway, $100,000 for the Medway Thrive program, $100,000 for the new Department of Public Services building, $60,000 for solar school zone lights, $50,000 for the Medway Community Farm, $50,000 for a tri-county van that includes Medway and Franklin, $50,000 for Metro West Veterans District, which includes Franklin and Medway, $35,000 for Medway for historical document preservation, and on and on. These are the types of things that are important as a state representative to deliver for your community. I have done this in 5.5 years, and there's more to come.
Thank you, Jeff. Okay, the last audience question for Patrick. Who do you most admire in the legislature? Hopefully there's someone you admire in the legislature.
I hope it's me.
No, I do admire Jeff's, you know, commitment to the district. I think we just have different philosophies on how we think it's best handled and the process of going through that. There's actually been one person I've met along the campaign trail. Senator Ryan Fatman is, you know, a young up-and-coming senator who, state senator, who I think he represents the Webster area, but the way he handles his business, the way he's caring and tries to represent people from all walks of life without really conceding to his own values. I know he receives flack from people who don't, you know, tend to agree with what he stands for, but I think he tries to seek truth in everything that he does, and I just want to, you know, follow in his footsteps and really, you know, take charge on what I think is, you know, most needed for our district. And yeah, I think he's definitely someone that I look up to.
That's great.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone who composed these very helpful and thoughtful questions. Last but not least, we're going to ask each candidate to provide a 3-minute summary. If they didn't get a chance to say something they wanted to earlier, or if they just want to summarize their point of view, please do so. Jeff, you're it.
Is it 3 or 5? Green or yellow?
This is a 3, I believe.
This is a 3. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming out on a rainy Saturday morning. It was great to engage you, and thank you, Patrick, number one, for getting in this race and for preserving democracy and allowing the citizens of Franklin to hear from us about our viewpoints and what we can do for the community. I think it's very important for democracy, and I'm delighted to have the opportunity to share this table. I was going to say stage, but this is not really a stage. In these days of gridlock and polarization in Washington, D.C., I'm proud to say that our state legislature continues to work together to find solutions to the challenges we face as a state. It isn't a matter of Democrat or Republican. It's a matter of working on issues that will help the residents of our state and improve lives. Together, we have worked on legislation involving education, job creation, economic development, and protecting and helping those in need. I'll share a story with you. We had a conference committee on the health care legislation. The conference committee is made up of 3 House members, 3 Senate members. I was one of the House members, 2 Democrats, 1 Republican. And I was the leader of the healthcare finance committee, so I took charge of those negotiations. And the Republican member of the committee came up to me after a few of our meetings and said, I have served on many conference committees in the legislature, and I have never served on a committee where I felt included, where I felt part of the process. That was the greatest compliment I could have ever received, because that's the type of bipartisan approach I bring to the work we do. I wanted to address one of the questions that had to do with the sales tax and the notion that I have not pushed for a sales tax decrease in the Commonwealth. As a matter of fact, in my first month being in the legislature, the governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, who was Deval Patrick at the time, had proposed reducing the sales tax to 4.5%, which I thought was a great idea. In order to accomplish that, we had to increase the income tax to 6.25%. I didn't think that was a good idea. So the cost of decreasing the sales tax is extraordinary. The sales tax question that was on the ballot, that has been since taken off the ballot as a result of the grand bargain, would have cost the Commonwealth of Massachusetts $1 billion of our budget. That would have resulted in less funding for local projects. It would have resulted in less funding for Chapter 70. So you have to be careful what you ask for. We do have a sales tax holiday in Massachusetts. That's going to become permanent, but we didn't have it for 2018. It wasn't included in the legislation. And so I proposed an amendment in the budget for 2018 that we should have that sales tax holiday in Massachusetts for 2018, and it became part of the budget. And I know the folks at And I know the folks at Simon's Furniture reached out to me. That was their best weekend they had. This is the type of work that I have brought to the legislature for the past 6 years. I'm committed to it. I've learned a lot about commitment by riding in the Pan Mass Challenge for the past 16 years. I wear a t-shirt that says commit and you'll figure it out. I'm committed to this race, I'm committed to this district, and I have figured it out. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. It has been a long and grueling campaign season, but I've learned an immense amount from the people of this district. After knocking on more than 4,000 doors, I can say that the constituents are more than ready for a representative that will truly represent their needs and values. The people of Franklin and Medway are looking for a representative that will work tirelessly to bring results, to stand up against the status quo, and to bring balance to a restless political climate. Ladies and gentlemen, I am that candidate, and I hope I can count on your vote on November 6th so that I can restore common sense to Beacon Hill. Thank you.
That was great. Thank you very much. Good job, man.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? In particular, if you have an interest in real estate, zoning, or construction, I would like someone to assist me by following the Planning Board, Zoning Board of Appeals, Conservation Commission meetings, one or more of the above. I'll provide the guidance on note-taking and sharing. You'll need to bring an inquisitive and open mind and a willingness to learn and share what you find. Overall, if you can use this information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can always reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.